قال أمير المؤمنين علي عليه السلام: رسولك ترجمان عقلك، وكتابك أبلغ ما ينطق عنك.
Imam Ali said, "Your messenger is the interpreter of your intelligence, while your letter is more eloquent in expressing your true self." Welcome back, dear friends. It's great to have you with us. This is IRIB English Radio, the programs to my brother, and we were discussing the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam. One of the beautiful things which we learn, dear friends, from Imam Ali alayhi salam is the fact that if we live a righteous life, if we live a noble life, if we live a good life, if we live a mu'min life, then even after we pass away, people will remember these beautiful things about us. So we find in a report by Dirar ibn Damara that following the Shahada, the martyrdom of Amir al-Mu'mineen, the commander of the believers, Imam Ali alayhi salam, this guy Dirar says that I headed for Syria to see Muawiyah. He says that knowing that I was a devotee of Imam Ali alayhi salam, Muawiyah said to me, "Describe Ali for me." I said to him, "Please accept my excuse, for my tongue cannot possibly describe Ali." Muawiyah, who had made himself the caliph and the governor of Syria, he said, "Your excuse is not accepted. You must describe him to me." So Dirar again says, "Now that you refuse to accept my excuse, listen carefully. Ali was sharp-sighted, prudent, powerful, and strong in the way of Allah. What Ali said was a criterion to distinguish between what was just and unjust. Ali's judgments were fair. Ali was abounding in knowledge. Wisdom was evident in all dimensions of his character. Ali's intuition satiated those who had a thirst for it." And so, dear friends, we find that even after we die, people will remember us if we live a good and righteous life. And here specifically, we find that if we want to know the difference between just and unjust, if we want to know the difference between right and wrong, if we want to see somebody whose judgments are the best, if we want to go to the source of knowledge and wisdom, then we must turn towards Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salam. Beautiful and profound lessons brought to us by the universal persona, Imam Ali alayhi salam.
IRIB English Radio. You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Thank you. تمام ارزش ها و صفاتی که انسان چه به عنوان انسان مؤمن به اسلام چه به عنوان انسان مؤمن به هر دینی
human in general whether a muslim non-muslim or even a disbeliever respect the values present in the character of Ali ibn Abi Talib. This means Ali ibn Abi Talib is a global character who is respected by Sunnis, Shias, and even non-Muslims. Everyone, even the faithless people, respect Imam Ali and his personal values.
صبحن و كل اشرب ايام تبقى عيني بدمع مشتاق قد لسعت حية الهوى كبدي فلا تبي ولها ولا راغي
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. I'm Atta, the producer of the program To My Brother, and at this moment I invite you to listen to a short speech by Sheikh Fayyaz Jafar. I hope you enjoy it.
How many times within our communities in reality when we see someone sitting next to us, do we say, Assalamu alaikum, how's it going, how are you? Not to make small talk, but because you actually care about the person who's sitting next to you, even if you never met him or her before. Instead of creating cliques, instead of creating like divisions between people, making a difference in the world, in reality, starts with you giving out of your own self. Who is the personality in humanity who is loved the most? No individual in the world is loved more than Jesus, alayhi salatu wasalam, right? Muslims love Jesus, Christians love Jesus, anyone who ever heard an anecdote about Jesus, they love Jesus, alayhi salatu wasalam. Why do people love him so much? Did Jesus, alayhi salatu wasalam, rule a big piece of land? Was he the king or the president of a nation? No. Jesus, alayhi salatu wasalam, had nobody amongst his followers except for three groups of people. He had women, he had slaves, and he had the poor. The three most isolated groups in human history are the followers of Jesus, alayhi salatu wasalam. Yet people love him so much because he made his very best effort toward making small differences in the community that he was living in. In the anecdote of Ashura, who do we love the most? Who's the one that everyone wants to argue over who's going to sponsor that majlis? Who wants to distribute food in his name? Abul Fadl Abbas, why? Did Abu Fadl Abbas allow for that water to reach the children or no? No, but he made an attempt to do so. We love people who love to give. We love people who try to make a difference. And when we come toward understanding what it means toward being a person, being an individual who is making their very best effort toward making communal, socio-political changes within society, it starts with one giving out of their own selves.
الأمان يوم إلا من أتى الله بقلب سليم.
O Allah, I ask you for the protection on the day when property will not avail, nor sons except he who comes with a heart free from evil.
وأسألك الأمان يوم يعض الظالم على يدي يقول يا ليتني اتخذت مع الرسول سبيلا.
And I ask you for protection on the day when the unjust one will bite his hands, saying, Oh, would that I had taken away with the messenger.
وأسألك الأمان يوم يعرف المجرمون بسيماهم فيؤخذ بالنواصي والأقدام.
And I ask you for protection on the day when the guilty shall be recognized by their marks, so they shall be seized by the forelocks and the feet.
وأسألك الأمان يوم لا يجزي والد عن ولده ولا مولود هو جاز عن والده شيئا إن وعد الله حق.
And I ask you for protection on the day when a father shall not give any satisfaction for his son, nor shall the child give any satisfaction for his father. Surely the promise of Allah is true.
Dear listeners, we hope you enjoyed this episode of To My Brother. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. We leave you in Allah's care. Bye for now.
Around the world with reporters.
Hans Grundberg, known as the ambassador of the European Union to Yemen, is now the UN Special Envoy for the Arab country. He succeeded Martin Griffiths of the United Kingdom, who was appointed in February 2018 but failed to find a peaceful solution to the years-long war on Yemen.
The large number of UN appointments will not change anything as long as there is no will to separate the humanitarian situation from the military and political issues. Changing the UN envoy will return the political process to zero because he will bring new agenda that will certainly serve the US and the Saudi-led coalition, including obtaining new funding for the operational budget of the UN organizations.
The member of Yemen's Supreme Political Council, Mohammed Al-Houthi, says the new UN envoy for Yemen won't to bring anything new as long as the Saudi war and the blockade persist. He has called on the UN at its Security Council to stop supporting the US and Britain and start supporting permanent peace.
The recent UN resolutions have proven that the funding that the United Nations obtains from Saudi Arabia affects its decisions. If Yemen had provided funding to the UN envoy and his organization, the international body would have taken decisions in favor of the Yemenis. I believe that there will be no change in the political process, as the United Nations is not serious about committing to the principles and laws on which it was first established, which has become worthless now. All Yemenis have lost their confidence in the UN and all those who follow it.
Millions of Yemenis have been under a tight blockade since March 2015, when Saudi Arabia and its allies launched a devastating war on Yemen to reinstate a friendly regime there. The war has brought Yemen to what the UN calls the world's worst humanitarian crisis.
Observers say neither Grundberg nor anybody else can put an end to the suffering of millions of Yemenis as long as the UN puts a blind eye to Saudi atrocities. That's due to the kingdom's funding for the world body. They believe that Yemeni military operations are the only way to push Riyadh toward a political solution. Abdul Latif Roshali, Sana'a.
The Sudanese government vote to work with Ethiopian parties to enhance Ethiopia's unity amid the current conflicts in the African country. In a statement, Khartoum said it would work with the regional and international community to achieve peace in the neighboring country. Following an emergency meeting to assess the overall situation, it also urged all conflict parties to sit around the negotiation table and ensure humanitarian aid access to all those in need. The conflict in Tigray, Ethiopia has driven over 70,000 refugees in impoverished eastern Sudan. The United Nations agencies and aid groups struggle to evacuate them from the border and provide them with shelter. Millions are at risk of starvation as the brutal civil war in Tigray is reaching a turning point, with thousands of captured Ethiopian government troops arriving in the region. Tigray has been in the scene of fighting since Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed sent army in early November to topple the dissident regional authorities, which emerged from the Tigray People's Liberation Front. After early successes and a premature declaration of victory, government forces were bogged down in a vicious and months-long battle with pro-TPLF fighters. The Ethiopian army was backed by troops from the neighboring Amhara region and the army of Eritrea, which border Tigray.
The lengthy conflict between Ethiopian federal government and the Tigray front had already affected negatively not only Sudan and Ethiopia in particular, but also the Horn of Africa in general. This has prompted all the regional states to seek for a way to end the conflict in Ethiopia. Muhammad Ali Fazari, Khartoum.
This is the first time that three Iranian innovations have been approved and funded by the Global Innovation Exchange. Speaking at a press conference, head of Iran's national invention team said that the innovations have been evaluated by such international organizations as USAID, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundations before they receive the funds. Global Innovation Exchange is a global development technology platform for innovations, funding, and insights. The three Iranian innovations include The Genetics of Success by Mohammad Aryan Akbari, which is one of the top ideas, which introduces a new formula to predict an individual's likelihood of success and could raise $187,500 fund from Turkey. And the next project is a Smart Hospital Project by Amir Abbas Mohammad Kushki, which has managed to attract $2 million fund. The third Iranian project approved by the Global Innovation Exchange has been proposed by Zahra Ghazavi, which is a cuffless blood pressure measuring device based on light sender and receiver sensors. Moreover, Iran's national invention team has won several shining medals at Turkey's Global Innovation and Invention Contest, Technofest 20 and ISIF 20, which were held by the World Intellectual Property Organization and the International Federation of Inventors Association, in association with Turkish Ministry of Economy and Turkish Intellectual Property Organization. In this round of competitions, Amir Abbas Mohammed Kushki won silver medal for its smart robot preventing coronavirus. Dr. Aryan Akbari backed bronze medal for his Genetics of Success formula, and Zahra Ghazavi won silver medal for her blood pressure measuring device. Moreover, for the first time, two Iranian innovations have made way into MIT University Global Challenge Solve MIT, which have been published on its website.
This is the first time that a number of Iranian innovations have been well received at Global Innovation Exchange and have attracted international funds to develop the projects. Saman Kujurib, Tehran.
I do hereby declare that Kim Michelle Leadbeater is duly elected.
The UK Labour Party secured a narrow win in the key by-election constituency of Batley and Spen in northern England. The results announced early Friday morning shocked many, as Labour was tipped to lose the seat to either the ruling Conservatives or Workers' Party GB candidate George Galloway.
The battle for Batley appears to have left a bitter taste after accusations of racism, harassment and even dirty tricks has circled the headlines over the past couple of weeks, with Batley's Muslim community also apparently playing a key role after turning their backs on the Labour Party over perceived policy injustices regarding Palestine and Kashmir.
Amid accusations of poster vandalism by Labour activists, Mr. Galloway vowed legal action.
We have been multiply defamed to the point that I'm no longer prepared to talk with the mainstream media, which is why I'm talking to you now by this live stream. The whole election campaign was dominated by lazy and false tropes about our campaign, about the thousands of people that voted for us, about their motives for doing so, in a way which defamed them as much as it defamed me.
Despite Labour's win, experts claim Muslims still sent a strong message by removing their traditional loyal support.
So Muslims, this is an opportunity to build alliances with the voiceless in our wider communities. And for those who are outside of the Muslim community, look at us as your allies. We want to flex our political muscles and we are happy to do so alongside you, inshallah.
Despite Labour's win, British Muslims remain deeply frustrated. This aspect could affect future votes unless the party changes its policy towards Muslims dramatically. Robert Carter, London.
Bagram Military Air Base in northern Parwan province was known as an American town since it was considered as the biggest US military base in Afghanistan. Now, no American troop is in Bagram and it has been handed over to the Afghan government.
Both the Afghan government and the Taliban have welcomed the move. However, the militant group says the withdrawal of US forces from Afghanistan's Bagram air base is a hasty escape and the rising Taliban attacks across the country.
Meanwhile, many Afghans say the withdrawal needs to be viewed as a chance to remove violence from the country.
Political players in Afghanistan need to view the withdrawal of foreign troops as a big opportunity to end violence here. Both government and the Taliban must now get back to negotiations to settle the problems.
Afghan officials have always blamed the Taliban for waging war under the pretext of fighting foreign invasion. And now they call on the Taliban to logically decide on the fate of their own war-torn homeland.
If the excuse was foreign troops' presence, they are leaving now. Other issues such as ignoring the Republic or the Constitution by the Taliban don't make sense anymore. Challenges such as corruption could now be discussed peacefully. So we expect the Taliban to respect the nation's demand and responsibly resume intra-Afghan talks.
Some 9,600 foreign troops should leave Afghanistan by September 11. A deadline set by US President Joe Biden, who seeks to end America's longest war. It was launched in 2001 under the pretext of fighting terrorism. However, no peace has been achieved yet, and thousands of Afghans have lost their lives since then. Afghan officials say government forces are fully ready to independently defend the country amid withdrawal of foreign troops. Sayed Amin Alami, Kabul.
Iranian city of Qom marks the end of a week-long occasion known as the U.S. Human Rights Week. The annual event commemorates a series of tragic incidents that killed hundreds of Iranians. The last day of the week, which falls on July the 3rd, marks the 1988 shooting down of an Iranian airliner by the U.S. Navy, which killed all of the 290 people on board. After more than three decades, Iran is still waiting for an apology from the U.S. The American Human Rights Week also commemorates the 1981 bombing of the headquarters of Iran's Islamic Republic Party, carried out by the formidable Mojahedin-e-Khalq terrorist organization, known as the MKO. 73 leading officials, including the then Justice Chief Ayatollah Mohammad Beheshti, were killed in the terror attack. In 2012, the U.S. and Europe delisted the MKO as a terrorist entity, and since then, they have been holding regular meetings with the terror group, which is now based in France and Albania. The 1987 chemical bombardment of Iran's city of Sardasht is another incident that falls in the same period on the Iranian calendar. Iraq's chemical weapons were reportedly produced using materials supplied by the U.S. and other Western countries. The 1981 attempted assassination of the then-Iranian president Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei by the MKO is also among the incidents that's marked in the American Human Rights Week. Iran says the U.S. footprints can be traced in all of the incidents that fall in this fateful week. Activists here say Washington has so far shrugged off its crimes in Iran. And that is why Iran marks the American Human Rights Week every year to present documented instances of gross violations of human rights by the U.S., at least in Iran. Yusuf Jalali from the city of Qom.
Over 1 month since a ceasefire came into force between the Israeli regime and Hamas, Palestinians in the Gaza Strip still suffer from psychological trauma and feel unsafe. While fears are rising of another round of violence, Palestinians mark 15 years of a land, air, and sea Israeli blockade that has devastated Gaza's economy and caused widespread destruction, leaving most people largely cut off from the outside world.
The Israeli blockade imposed for 15 years led Palestinians to call for simple solutions. This blockade, of course, affected all life aspects, especially the rate of poverty and unemployment. There are many graduates who are jobless now. Wars and Israeli blockade isolated Gaza from the world, and it's not surprising that many countries know nothing about Gaza.
Israeli blockade imposed on the Gaza Strip affected badly on all life aspects, leading to high rates of poverty and unemployment. Most of the working-age population in the Gaza Strip are unemployed and without any source of income due to the lack of job opportunities.
There are a lot of graduated people without a job in Gaza. The unemployment rate is high and there are no job opportunities. For 15 years, we have been living in the same situation. There has been continuous escalations and war over Gaza, and people will suffer from everything and nothing changes.
Due to the limited sources and restrictions imposed on movement and entry of goods and fuel, only a limited amount of fuel and cooking gas reach homes and the electricity plant. As a result, Gazans are suffering an electricity crisis that has devastated daily life, especially on clean water, as people in Gaza suffer from salty and polluted water that is not fit for drinking. Both the continuous violence over the Strip and the Israeli blockade affected badly on every aspect of life for Palestinians, isolating and depriving them from their rights. Ruba Shavit, Gaza.
We have a duty to fight for.
Stop denying racism and start dismantling it. Those were the unequivocal comments by Michelle Bachelet, the United Nations Human Rights Chief, following a landmark report launched after the killing of George Floyd in the United States, which called on countries worldwide to do more to tackle the systemic racism against people of African descent.
I'm calling on all states to stop denying and start dismantling racism, to end impunity and build trust, to listen to the voices of people of African descent, and to confront past legacies and deliver redress.
The report found that police use of racial profiling and excessive force was systemic in much of North America, Europe and Latin America.
We're suffering right across the world. Adam Traoré in France, George Floyd in America,
Dalian Atkinson and Kevin Clark here in the United Kingdom. You know, 24 people were shot in the favelas of African descent by Brazilian police, you know, in the last 12 months. So you can see that wherever you look.
It also concluded that racism was the biggest problem in countries steeped in the history of the transatlantic slave trade, which ultimately laid the foundations for much of the wealth they enjoy today.
The report highlighted the UK as one of 60 countries that needs to do more to help bring an end to systemic racism, notably urging them to apologise to people of African descent and make amends through reparations. Yet despite the UK playing a leading role in the transatlantic slave trade, so far the British state has shown an unwillingness to do either.
Michelle Bachelet acknowledged the pivotal role that the Black Lives Matter movement played in bringing this conversation to the forefront, but accepted that now it's on states around the world to take concrete action and make amends for centuries of violence and discrimination. But for countries like the United Kingdom, just issuing an apology would be a start. Ahmed Kabbalah, London.
American and NATO forces have finally left Afghanistan's Bagram Air Base, the hub of the US military operations in the country for nearly 20 years. The pullout marks a symbolic end to what US President Joe Biden has called Washington's forever war. It comes after Biden announced earlier this year his decision to withdraw all US forces from Afghanistan by the 20th anniversary of the September 11th attacks. The pullout has been welcomed by the Afghan people.
This is good news that the Americans left Bagram. The Americans had reached an agreement with the Taliban in Doha, and these agreements must be implemented. And this is for the good of Afghanistan.
God willing, there will be peace in this country. We want peace until the end. God is merciful, and we hope that one day there will be peace in our country.
The Taliban militant group has also welcomed the withdrawal as a positive step. The group's spokesman said the full withdrawal of foreign forces will pave the way for Afghans to decide about their future themselves. In February 2020, the administration of former President Donald Trump struck a deal with the Taliban to withdraw all U.S. troops from Afghanistan by May 2021. Joe Biden rescheduled the date and set September 11th for the pullout. The U.S. and its NATO allies invaded Afghanistan in October 2001 under the pretext of the so-called War on Terror. The Taliban militant group was removed from power following the invasion. However, after nearly two decades, the U.S. invasion failed to uproot the militant group, and Washington had to finally sit at the negotiating table with the group. According to the Pentagon, the U.S. military operations in Afghanistan have cost nearly $825 billion. Also, according to U.S. media reports, more than 2,400 U.S. military personnel have been killed in Afghanistan. The U.S. war in Afghanistan has left thousands of Afghan civilians dead and caused a significant damage to the country's infrastructure. And now, with the prospect of an end to the war, which though failed to bring security to the country, calls will certainly get louder for the prosecution of American troops and officials involved in the war crimes against the Afghan people.
The leader of the Islamic movement in Nigeria, Sheikh Ibrahim Al-Zazaki, is standing trial for allegations of culpable homicide, unlawful assembly, disruption of public peace, among other charges which the Islamic cleric has denied. Rounding up his address to the court, the leader of the defense team explained that the prosecution has not established any case against Sheikh Ibrahim Al-Zazaki. He said none of the people accused of the crimes attributed it to his client, and the court has released many of them.
If we feel that no prima facie case has been established against your client, you make a no-case submission, and that is what has happened in this case. So we are waiting for the ruling of the court.
The prosecution has presented a total of 15 witnesses, including Nigerian military officers. But Zazaki's defense team said all the witnesses that were brought before the court confirmed that they did not see Sheikh Zazaki during the attack by the army.
The prosecution called 15 witnesses we felt that no case has been made to warrant our clients being asked to give evidence. In other words, we addressed the court to the fact that there is nothing to defend on the part of our client.
The trial judge adjourned the case to July 28, when he is expected to deliver his ruling on the no-case submission by Zazaki's defense team. Sheikh Zazaki has been in detention since December 2015 after soldiers of the Nigerian army attacked his home and worship center, killing over 340 of his supporters. Members of the Islamic movement in Nigeria have continued with their protests, demanding the release of Sheikh Ibrahim al-Zazaki and his wife Zinat. They have always insisted that Islamic cleric is an innocent man who has suffered persecution by the Nigerian government. Anjum Abdullahi, Kaduna.
انسان را مطمئن می کند ذکر خدا ذکر الله تطمئن القلوب.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth. Allahu ya Allah subhanallah. Allahu ya Allah walhamdulillah. Allahu wa la ilaha illa
I invite you to listen to a short part of the book Sirru Salat, The Secret of Prayer by Imam Khomeini. The sincerity is in fact the purification from the absolute mixing of non-God, and according to the common worship, it is the purification of hidden and revealed dualism such as corruption, hypocrisy, delusion, and pride. Surely the pure religion is for Allah the only. And in the purification of mixing egoism and I-ness, which is in the religion of the knowledgeable ones, the great dualism, the mother of idols is your desire.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Today we are with another program of Spring of Truth from IRB English Radio. And I'm your host, Sayyid Mohsin Naqvi, with the viewpoints of Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayhi. In one of his speeches, Imam Khomeini mentions that the day our representatives develop traits of palace dwellers, or God forbid, part with their worthy slum-dwelling character, then that is the day when we should ring the death knell for the country. Imam Khomeini says that is the day when we should ring the death knell for the country, because this country was for the poor, this country was for all, this country was a country in which everyone was given an equal right, everyone was given their right justly, this country was supposed to bring justice, was supposed to bring freedom, was supposed to bring independence for the people, and was supposed to be released from the Eastern or Western bondage. And the day if such a person who has the traits of palace dwellers, or he has this kind of practice that he does not care about people. He does not care about the barefooted. He does not care about the hunger of the people. Ya Hayyu Ya Qayyum. Ya Hayyu Ya Qayyum. Ya Hayyu Ya Qayyum. Ya Hayyu Ya Qayyum. He himself eats the food maybe three times or maybe more than that. But there are some people who can only eat one time If such a person who does not care about such things, such issues, becomes a representative, then that is the day when we should ring the death knell for the country, according to Imam Khomeini. Therefore, it is the duty of whole nation, the Muslim Ummah, of every single Iranian living in the Islamic Republic of Iran, to choose a person as a representative who is submissive to the Islamic laws. Because if he is submissive to Islamic laws, if he is a God-fearing person, if he fears God, he knows that he is accountable on the Day of Judgment. He is answerable of his deeds on the Day of Judgment. And once he knows that, he will take care of his actions. He will justly deal with the people, inshallah. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via internet, shortwave, medium wave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 41 meters, 7,410 kilohertz, every day from 15:20 to 16:20 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 19:20 to 20:20 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAT 5 and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box 19395-6767 Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
In the limelight.
Calls for Brazilian president's impeachment grow amid claims government sought to profit from COVID jabs. Stay with us for an article in this regard written by Tom Phillips, reporter. This article is published under the heading Brazilians Take to Streets to Demand Removal of Jair Bolsonaro. Stay tuned for more. Huge crowds of protesters have returned to the streets of Brazil's biggest cities to demand the removal of a president they blame for more than 500,000 coronavirus deaths. Tens of thousands of demonstrators hit the streets of Rio de Janeiro recently as calls for Jair Bolsonaro's impeachment intensified after allegations that members of his government had sought to illegally profit from the purchase of COVID vaccines. "The people have awoke," said Benedita da Silva, a 79-year-old congresswoman and veteran of Brazilian left, as she joined a rally. "I'm here because we absolutely have to get this monster out of power and reclaim Brazil," said Magda Souza, a 64-year-old dissenter, as she marched through downtown Rio with her husband, Jose Baptista. "We are surrounded by barbarism," Souza added as a police helicopter circled over the throng. Souza wore a bright red t-shirt calling for the return of Bolsonaro's left-wing antagonist, the former president Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, who recently stormed back on the political scene after his political rights were restored and is expected to run for the presidency next year. But many at the demonstration said they were not members of Brazil's left and simply wanted rid of a far-right leader they accused of condemning thousands of their fellow citizens to death with his chaotic and some now suspect corrupt response to coronavirus. Recently, a Supreme Court judge ordered an investigation into whether Bolsonaro had failed to act after being alerted to suspicious of high-level corruption involving the procurement of millions of COVID vaccines from the Indian pharmaceutical company Bharat Biotech. According to the official account, more than 522,000 Brazilians have lost their lives to coronavirus, second only to the U.S., but the South American country's epidemic is still far from being controlled. Patricia Ribeiro, a 47-year-old registrar, said she had never attended a street protest before this, but had come to pay tribute to her brother, Pedro Ribeiro, who died in March after catching COVID and spending 8 days on a ventilator. "I blame the government for my brother's death," she said. "They behave as if our lives are worth nothing, as if human life was worthless." "He had so many dreams," Ribeiro added, "of her brother, a single father, who was about to graduate from university and leaves two orphaned children." Daniel Mello, an 18-year-old student, came to remember his 86-year-old grandmother, who also died of COVID. "She went to hospital and never came back," Mello said, adding that he blamed Brazil's genocidal president for failing to alert citizens to the dangers of coronavirus, a disease Bolsonaro has dismissed as a little flu. "He wanted to kill everyone," Mello claimed. Many protesters waved Brazil's yellow and green flag, a symbol used by Jair Bolsonaro's far-right movement, in an effort to reclaim the flag from his followers. André da Silva, a leftist activist from a social group called Movimento Favela, who was among those carrying the Brazilian flag. "It isn't their flag, it is the Brazilian flag, and we are Brazilians. Brazil belongs to all of us. We are the children of this nation. We are patriots, just they claim to be." Paulo Betti, a celebrated actor and director, was another who claimed clutching Brazil's green and yellow jack. We are here to honor the dead and to declare we are alive. The 60-year-old said, attacking Bolsonaro's assault on the Brazilian Amazon. We cannot allow this destruction to continue, said Silvia Barak, a well-known actor who said Bolsonaro needed to be immediately removed from office. This pandemic has convinced me that we cannot wait to vote him out in 2022. Anti-Bolsonaro protests were reported to have taken place in many of Brazil's most important cities, including Belém, Recife, São Paulo, and Brasília, as well as European cities, including London, Barcelona, and Dublin. The primary objective is to bring down Bolsonaro, said Mauricio Machado, a 43-year-old raider who came to Rio rally wearing a face shield inscribed with the words "Genocidal Bolsonaro, biological threat." Bolsonaro is a biological threat, a political threat, a psychological threat, an extraterrestrial threat, Machado said. Guilherme Bolo, a prominent leftist and one of the organizers of the Sao Paulo rally, said the COVID corruption allegations had added to already profound public anger against Bolsonaro. For the first time, I think impeachment is a real responsibility, Bolo said, celebrating the fact that right-wingers were now joining the protest movement. Political observers are skeptical about Bolsonaro's imminent demise, pointing to the opposition of Arthur Lira, the president of Brazil's lower house, to impeachment. Lira would need to approve the start of impeachment proceedings, and at the most, the politicians, who is a member of the powerful political bloc propping up Bolsonaro, found himself in the protesters' crosshairs. Arthur Lira, an accomplice to genocide, read one banner. Another poster said simply, "Vaccines, not bribes."
This is A to Z. An introduction to Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, Martyrdom and Jihad. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. The concept of martyrdom in Islam has been misunderstood by both Muslims and non-Muslims. Most non-Muslim scholars say that jihad is the holy war, and they confine it to the holy war, while jihad is way beyond than that fighting in the battlefield. Jihad has to be understood properly. The Muslims, on the other hand, rather the some Muslims, mostly taking into consideration the martyrs of the early days of Islamic history, define martyrdom in terms of the fatalistic death of those dear to Allah, and do not see close link between continuous struggle in the cause of Allah, which we are calling jihad, which literally means struggling and striving in the way of Allah, and martyrdom. So they don't link the two up. They see martyrdom, unfortunately, in isolation, in some cases, of course. And then, you know, when it comes to jihad, they misunderstand what the concept really signifies. The word shahada, the word martyrdom, is derived from the Arabic verbal root shahada, which means to see, to witness, to testify, to become a model and paradigm. Shahada, therefore, literally means to see, to witness, and to become a model. Now, in order for anyone to become a role model in Islam, there is a lot more than just giving up your life. You have to have a character. You have to have a special belief system in place. You have to be submissive to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, His Prophet, His Quran, His Ahlul Bayt. There's a whole list of prerequisites for anyone who wishes to be a role model. And then in the end, he gives his life in the way of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, just like Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Welcome back, dear listeners. Today we are discussing martyrdom and jihad, and we are highlighting the fact that the Orientalists, the non-Muslims, the Muslims, many of them have misunderstood the concept of martyrdom and shahada and jihad and how they are intertwined and what Islam really means when it talks about jihad and shahada. Now, a shaheed, a martyr, is the person who sees and witnesses. And he is therefore the witness, as if the martyr witnesses and sees the truth physically and thus stands by it firmly, so much so that not only does he testify it verbally, but he is prepared to struggle and fight and give up his life for the truth, and thus to become a martyr. In this way, and by his struggle and sacrifice for the sake of truth, he becomes a model, a paradigm, and an example for others, worthy of being copied and worthy of being followed. But remember, we have to figure out how to reach that perfection, the human perfection, after which we can become a role model. Not everybody who gives up his life in the way of Allah is a role model. There is gradability. There are different levels. Being able to step beyond the line for divine values like justice, morality, rights of the oppressed, the martyrs of Islam continue to give their lives in the way of Allah. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, thank you very much for staying with us till the end of today's episode of A to Z. Don't forget to log on to our website at www.parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We leave you all in the care of Allah. Till next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.